Welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Neurology. I'm Aaron Van Dorn. Today on the podcast, I spoke with Dr. Henk Jan Vesteening of the Department of Neurology at the University Medical Center in Utrecht, Netherlands. Dr. Vesteening, your study looked at the potential causal factors for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS. What did you find?
We studied in our study three lifestyle factors, smoking, alcohol, and BMI. We performed a Bayesian analysis, so a probabilistic approach. And with that approach, we tried to estimate the probability of a causal relationship between those lifestyle factors and ALS. And we found that smoking is likely causing ALS with a very high probability. The second lifestyle factor we studied in our causal analysis was alcohol. And we also found for alcohol that it is likely to cause ALS. The third factor was the BMI, the body mass index. And we found there different results in different analysis. So we thought about it, and it might be that there is some age-dependent relationship between BMI and ALS. So a higher BMI on younger age might be a causal factor for ALS, while it might be not a causal factor for ALS later in age.
How did your study differ from previous studies, and what were the limitations of your study?
I think that in our study, we used an integrative approach with five different lifestyle factors, smoking, alcohol, and BMI, which I mentioned before, and additionally also energy intake and physical activity. And those lifestyle factors are clearly integrated with each other so that we get a view of the pre-symptomatic landscape of ALS with regard to those five lifestyle factors. So that integrative approach is new, I think. Second is that we did this study in a large population-based approach in the Netherlands, a large data set with more than 1,000 patients, more than 1,000 ALS patients without a C9 ORF repeat expansion, and also more than 1,000 controls and a few hundred ALS patients with a C9 ORF mutation. Moreover, we used a longitudinal approach. Thus, we studied three lifestyle factors, BMI, smoking, and physical activity, up to 50 years before disease onset. And fourth, used a stratification for the C9 ORF 72 repeat expansion. That's important because we know that the pathogenic mechanism for patients with this mutation might be different from patients who do not have this mutation. And the second part of your question was about the limitations. As you already heard, we did not have longitudinal data for all the factors we studied. So alcohol and energy intake couldn't be studied longitudinally. And also not all lifestyle factors could be analyzed in a causal analysis, because for lifestyle, physical activity, and energy intake, there were no well-powered GWAS studies available. Another limitation is that we retrospectively collected our data, also our longitudinal data. And important here to say is that all participants were unaware of the research questions. In our study, we found differences between carriers of the C9 mutation and non-carriers of this mutation. And we also performed causal analysis. We choose this approach because even in a retrospectively collected data set, this approach might help to prevent limitations of retrospective design, such as recall bias. Finally, we performed causal analysis, and I think it's important to say that also causal analysis are not free of assumptions. We did many analyses. We checked our assumptions as much as possible. We used as much data as available, but still causal analysis have very stringent assumptions, and we couldn't find any violations of that assumptions. But it's important to keep in mind that when talking about causal analysis, that we aimed relatively high, and also these analyses are not free of assumptions.
What are the clinical and practical implications of your findings?
I think that our study might be the first steps to prevention of ALS. So before we definitely can prevent ALS, we really need to do more research. So I see this study as the first steps that we show that it might be possible, it might be feasible to study factors in a pre-symptomatic phase. And if you can really establish causal factors during the pre-symptomatic phase, intervening on these factors might, in the end, prevent ALS. So I think it's now too early to say we can prevent ALS, but I see our study as the first steps in that direction. And furthermore, many patients who I see in our at our outpatient clinic are asking me, why did I get ALS? Did I something wrong? Or what are factors that can lead to ALS? And a few years ago, there was already a very nice study which established that there is a multi-step model in ALS. So there's not just one factor, but usually many factors. And I think with this study, we give some face to that different factors that might play a role during the pre-symptomatic phase and increase the risk of getting ALS. So it's also, I think, for counseling of patients and for explaining how ALS works and how it's developing, this study might contribute to the understanding of that.
What are the next directions for research into the treatment and prevention of ALS?
Yes. Yeah, so first, about prevention of ALS, I think that with our study, we show that it might be possible to find causal factors that, when treated, might prevent ALS. And to further study that, I think that we really need innovative study designs. ALS is a relatively rare disease. So before we really can prevent ALS, we need much more data, larger studies. I also think it's very important to have international collaboration. So working together on this is really important, in my opinion. I think that one of the strengths of our study is the integrative approach. And this integrative approach shows that when you study lifestyle factors in combination with each other, you can really get a step further in disentangling ALS and really understanding what's going on and hopefully in the end prevent ALS. Then the second part is about the treatment. I think that's important to mention that causal factors will not necessarily lead to treatment because when the treatment is only needed when patients are already symptomatic, but knowledge about the pathways of disease that might cause ALS can really lead to new therapies. And I finally would like to say that I think both prevention and treatment is so important for ALS patients because lots of people are still dying and suffering from ALS. And we urgently need treatment. But the highest aim is, I think, prevention. And I would say, let's try to reach that.
Dr. Vesterding, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you too, very much.